Well, it's been a great morning. And that was a great talk about the rocks, wasn't it? Thank you very much for that. So you're the expert now. Very good. Oh, maybe it's your son. That's great. So today we're talking on the rocks, the fossils and the age of the earth, which seems a little bit unusual, but it's going to be great. And rocks and fossils. And we find actually it's connected with the Bible. It's got an incredible connection with the Bible, and it affects our faith, it affects our kids, it affects our family, our understanding of the fossils and that sort of thing. Now, I've got a picture here. Can you see this picture? I wonder if you can, anybody can figure out where I am. Does anybody know where I am in this picture? Who said that? Drumheller. He's a good reader. It is in Drumheller. Does anybody know where Drumheller is? Hey? Does anybody know what Drumheller's famous for? Dinosaurs, that's right. Drumheller's in Canada. And I'd never heard of a Drumheller before, but I went over to Canada and the people that I went with said, you have to visit Drumheller. And so I went along and had a look at it, and it's an amazing place. So this is as we're entering the place. My wife took a picture. It's famous for dinosaurs. You can see some of the rocks in the background, so it's down in a little bit of a valley with the river, and somebody says it's famous for two pine trees, and there you can see some pine trees. But I went into the museum. I'll show you a picture of the museum later on, and it had this display of dinosaurs which are found in the area. And here's one of them on display. I took a photo of it. Called Triceratops horridus. These are paleontologists. They think of these amazing names. Horridus. Don't you think that's a great name for a dinosaur? Triceratops horridus. Now, the interesting thing is, on display there, well, you can see how big it is. See how monstrous that dinosaur is. It stands really quite tall. And it's got these three horns on it. Triceratops. And and actually, they had a little display about it, but the thing is, it didn't appear when they dug it up. It didn't have a label on it. They dug it up in the rocks around, you know, where that museum is, where Drumheller is, but they didn't dig it up with a label. But they said it's 68 million years old, which is really interesting, isn't it? And you can see the dinosaur, or the remains of it. You can see it, and that's evidence, a dinosaur evidence. But the label is not something that they found. It's something that they invented. Now, I see a problem with that. Do you see a problem with that, 68 million years? A lot of people don't see a problem with it. But I just want you to picture six. I can't even imagine 1 million years. Can you imagine 1 million years? It's a long time to imagine. This is 68 of them, and the world is supposed to be much older than that. And so 68 million years ago, when was Adam and Eve? That was about 6,000 years ago, wasn't it, in the Garden of Eden? And so, and that was very nice, wasn't it, when he created Adam and Eve? Quite an amazing story about how that happened. But here they are in the Garden of Eden. This is a little cartoon. And one of my colleagues went to a theological college overseas, and the guy who he was meeting with said that he didn't see a problem with the world being millions of years old. He taught in a theological college. He said the main thing is that God created. Whether he did it in 6 days or 6 million years doesn't really matter. But here we got Adam and Eve. That God's just finished his creation. When was it? Right at the beginning, the Bible says. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And so here they are, and their artist drew this picture, makes it look really nice. Got the pretty flowers and they get a couple of geese. Can you see that? And the green, it's all green, so it's really, really nice. And, of course, the rain that we've had today makes things green too, doesn't it? So rain is good. And but here they are in the Garden of Eden, and Eve says, oh, this is so beautiful here. It's really amazing. It's so delightful. And Adam said, yes, Eve, it's very good, just like God said. But you see, if we put the millions of years in, people say, well, maybe it doesn't matter if God created over millions of years and you got the millions of years in, you've got all those layers of rock, which you've got all those fossils in. So here they are, they're after Adam and Eve. Can you see that? These layers of rock, and they got all these fossils. The artist put a lot of fossils in there. It's a diagram, of course. But anyway, and so it doesn't really fit there. You look at that, you don't think, that doesn't look very good. You know, does it really? And so, and not only that, the fossils have got death. They talk about death, don't they? Suffering. You find lots of animals have got cancers and that in their bones and disease. And so this is before Adam and Eve. And so, and that's the big issue. Why we're talking about rocks, fossils, and the age of the earth is because what we hear about rocks and fossils really screws up. It really messes up the whole of the gospel because, you see, this is the issue in 1 Peter 3:15. It says you've got to have an answer. You've got to be able to answer these tough questions. And it says there, it says, always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. And that's always good. But see, prepared. Pre means beforehand. You work out beforehand. You think about it beforehand, and that's the great thing about Sabbath school, isn't it? Is that, and I presume all of you were there this morning. I can't really recognize, but the good thing about Sabbath school is that you're actually doing some preparation and thinking and understanding. And it's not just superficial, and that's what it's important as a Christian to have thought through these issues. And so we've got an issue. The issue is we've got all these fossils. And they're millions of years old. And so how does that work? You know, and some people, I remember I used to puzzle over that. And they did, when I was at church, the church I was in, they didn't talk about it much. And so I remember somebody saying, well, you know, it says, the Bible says one day with the Lord is as 1,000 years. So it's not necessarily one day. So, oh, that sounds good. Did anybody tell you think about that? And as I thought about that, it didn't really make sense. But there are a lot of ideas that were given to me, and it didn't really make sense. And so the big thing is this fossil record, understanding where the fossils fit in the Bible. And that's a big puzzle. Well, it's not really, because is there anything in the Bible that talks about something that could have created a lot of fossils? And indeed there is. It's called Noah's flood. So we're talking about rocks. It formed rocks, and we're talking about fossils. That's Noah's flood, and the age of the earth. It was a big catastrophe. And so what happened was a catastrophe doesn't take very long. And so that's connected with the age of the earth. Now, I don't know how many parents there are here of teenage children, but I know my kids. They had their kids, and they were always dealing with things like this. Have you seen things like this? Is anybody here? What's the situation here in Melbourne? How many hours does somebody have to have up in order to be able to get a license on their car? Do you know how many hours it is? 120. It didn't take long to say that, eh? Have you got a teenager? This one. And so how many hours have you got up? 1 hour. Well, it's a start. I reckon the biggest step is the start. That's really good. Well, come up to Queensland. It's only 100 hours in Queensland you have to get. That's just pretty cool. But I mean, I think, do you ever think, you know, why does the government do that? Why do they make it so difficult for young people? Why don't they just give them a license and let them drive? Hey, that'd be the way to do it, wouldn't it? Well, you see, the thing is, when you'd start driving, you encounter situations where you've got to think quickly, you've got to make a quick decision, you've got to make the right decision. All sorts of situations arise, and so that's why you need the time, all those hours, so that you're prepared for everything that can come up. And that's really what the situation is when we're thinking about the Word of God and all this stuff in our society about fossils and rocks and millions of years and evolution and all of that. You've got to have thought about it. And so, and people that don't think about it, families that don't, it creates a problem. Like this is an example. In our culture, there's a lot of young people who grew up in the church. I don't know if it's like this in your church, but there's a lot of young people who grow up in the church. They go through, you know, the Sabbath school. They go through the education, and they go to church. And of those people that grow up in the church, when they hit a university, something like 70% of them drop out of church. Did you know that? The Christian pollster George Barna revealed that up to 70% of Christian children who grew up in the church drop out when they hit college. And that's not a good thing, is it? I don't think it's a good thing. And so I spoke at a youth group a number of months ago now, and it was on a Friday night or something like that. And one of the mothers who knew that this was coming up, she emailed me and she said, "My son is at university. He's in the first year and he's coming home with all these questions which I can't answer. Can you please answer these questions at youth group?" So she had a whole list of questions in her email. And I've put some of them up here just for you to see. I'm going to do it in a minute. I've skipped a bit. The questions were, I'll read them out to you. Some of the questions: does natural selection prove evolution? Is chimp DNA similar to human DNA? And does quantum physics prove the Big Bang? And all that sort of thing. So she wanted me to answer those questions. There's hundreds of questions. There's hundreds of them. And so that's why what we do is we got a book called The Creation Survival Guide for young people when they're at university. And also we have lots of information which enables young people to see how the information is provided and how to think about things in a different way. And so what I want to do today is to show how we can look at the information. Can you see here that there's two sides of two faces here? There's the two people looking at dinosaur bones. Can you see that? And they're looking through glasses. So they got these glasses on, and the sort of glasses that you wear affects the way you see the evidence. So what's got more evidence? Is there more evidence for creation or more evidence for evolution? Who thinks that there is more evidence for creation? See, in church, you've got to put your hand up for creation. Who thinks there's more evidence for evolution? Nobody. There you go. But did you know this? See this picture? They've both got the same evidence. Did you see that? It's the evidence is the same. Isn't that amazing? That's really a key thing. It's the same evidence. So these two people are looking at it. And so what's different is the glasses that they're wearing. Can you see that? So one person's looking through the evolution glasses, and he says, "Oh, this is evidence for evolution." Another person's looking through Bible glasses and says, "Oh, this is evidence for the Bible. This is evidence for creation." And so that's what we're wanting to share about today. Now, what I hope today that this will do for you is this. First of all, I hope that this, to be able to warn that there are risks to your family. Just living in our culture today and raising up kids, there's risks to your family because of what they hear. What they hear and see on TV, what they're reading in maybe in their textbooks at school, when you go on holidays and you look at the tourist signs and all that sort of thing, there's risks that your kids face and there are questions which come up. And I hope today we'll be able to see those. It'll show you why creation is factual. Looking at geology, the rocks, the fossils, you'll be able to see that the earth is young and creation is true. It'll give you confidence then in the Word of God. And also what will happen, it will reveal ways to you in which you can be prepared. And so that's why it's going to be so really, really cool. And so the big thing that really affects the rocks and the fossils, the significance of it, is Noah's Ark. And where do you find evidence? Where do you find information about Noah's Ark? If you want to find information about the global flood, where would you go? The Bible. That's exactly right. I mean, that's the only place where it's got the account of what happened. And this guy, Johan Hubers, he lives in Holland, he had a passion. He wanted to build a replica of Noah's Ark. And so this is what he's done here. He's got this incredible big boat made out of wood. He was a contractor, and he's got the hammer there. He's a contractor. And it's not exactly a replica, but when you see it, you know exactly what it is, don't you? It's Noah's Ark. And it's over 140 metres long. And also what happens is it's on display here at a wharf just where people walk past, and they realise just how big it is, Noah's Ark. And he's got animals on it, like models of animals and that sort of thing. And he also built, he built an earlier one. It's not quite as big as the real ark, but it was the biggest one he could start, and he's sort of done it in two steps. And here it is going down the one of the canals in Holland. See that? It's going through. They've got the bridges lifted up so that it can go past. Can you see the giraffe on the top of it? Can you see that? And can you see all the people out looking at it? Incredible. It just attracts such interest. And a lot of people, when they saw it, do you know what they said? They said, I didn't realize it was so big. See, Holland was a country which was involved in the Reformation. They were involved in sending out missionaries, and there was an incredible Christian country. But like so many countries in the West, there's been a great decline in the number of people attending church, and there's been a great decline in lots of things connected with Christianity. Generations have abandoned their Christian heritage. It used to be something like 95% would identify as Christian. And now it's gone down to 40%. And so what happened was these people saw this ark going down the canal, and so they went home and they dug out the big family Bible because they wanted to find out what it was about. And they found the account of Noah's ark, and they started reading their Bibles again, because this indicates that the Bible's talking about stuff which is true. And so we did a particularly special article in Creation magazine about Johann Huber's. Now, you might be thinking, I don't know if you are thinking, but there's a lot of issues in this and some of the questions that I raised. You might be thinking, how can I come up to speed with this? And one of the ways you can do it, you know, what would be good to have would be something that's a bit painless, don't you reckon? Something that doesn't take a lot of effort. Something which is going to give you the real key information, and you're not going to have to do a lot of work for it. Well, one of the ways of doing that is by getting a newsletter, and so you can sign up to this out there at the table, just putting your email address down. We're not going to pass anything around just at the moment, but this sort of thing will actually new information comes out. And stuff that's in the news, and you become informed about it, and you can talk about it with your friends at work. Another way is that you can go to this website, which is called, I'm sorry, it's a difficult name to remember. If you want to find out about creation, where would you go? It's hard to think about. But you go to creation.com. That's where you go. And there's thousands of articles. And so my daughter, you know, when her kids come home from school, when they used to come home from school, and they'd have questions about that something they'd learned at school and it was obviously goes against the Bible, she'd say, well, hang on, let's just go and check that out. And she would go to creation.com and check it out. And so we'll be encouraging you to sign up to the creation.com newsletter out there. So the other big question that can rattle a lot of people is, well, Noah's flood, where did all the water come from to cover the earth? That's a big question. I was talking about that as an engineer with my colleagues at work, and that was a big question. One of the guys said, well, I don't believe the flood, because where did all the water come from? How could it all cover Mount Everest? And that sort of thing. Well, this is a little illustration, just a little diagram to illustrate to you how it happens. Did you know, like, you've got the continents which sit high, and you've got the ocean basins which sit low, you know, and so that's the way it is on the earth, and there's the water in the earth there. How would you cover the continents? How would you flood the earth? Well, we should know today, because there are lots of earthquakes and movements of the earth's crust, and so all you have to do is push the ocean basins up and push the continents down. And if the earth becomes, you know, even all around the globe like that, then there's enough water in the oceans now to cover the earth to a depth of something like 3 kilometres. Isn't that incredible? Did you know that it's already there? So when you go out for a swim in Port Phillip, it's already there. That's where the water is, and it covered the earth just by movements in the earth's crust. And we know that the Bible says that the fountains of the great deep broke open, and the geologists today are able to identify that, the various ways the crust is broken. So what would it, you know, if there was a global flood, what evidence would you expect to find? There was a guy who wrote a song. I don't know if you're familiar with it. His name was Buddy Davis. He wrote a song, you know, what evidence would you find? Billions of dead things buried in rock layers, laid down by water all over the earth. And so when you do go out as a geologist and look at the rocks, which we saw here, and fossils, what do you find? Billions of dead things. They're fossils buried in rock layers all over the earth. And there's lots of examples. Here's an amazing example here of a marine reptile. It's about 2 meters long. Is that 2 meters? I don't think that's quite 2 meters. But it's about 2 meters long. And it was buried in this limestone, incredibly well preserved. And it was a female ichthyosaur. Did you know it was a female? Can you tell? Can you see the lipstick on that? That's how you tell. No, not really. That's not how you tell. But can you tell why it's a female? It's giving birth. Can you see that? It's giving birth to a baby ichthyosaur. Now, I know that I know some people have had some pretty difficult births, but nobody that's been sort of, you know, it's lasted for thousands of years waiting for them to be covered up with sediment. This was buried in instantly, snap frozen in time. And so this is just one example of an amazing evidence of Noah's flood. There's lots of evidences which I'll mention. If you go to North America, we could go to Australia, but I want to go to North America. Geologists have found there was, you know, they've traced out where the sediments are, where the water covered the North American continent, and that's their diagram of what it was like. Actually, it covered the whole of the continent. This is just what's left, is where the sediments that are left on the continents that's being shown there. And I remember Drumheller, that's where Drumheller is, right there. And so all these dinosaur fossils are being found in sediments where there was lots of water all up through North America. And this is what the museum looks like. This is the Royal Tyrrell Dinosaur Museum. And you saw the dinosaur that I just... what was the name of it again? Triceratops. Hyrtus, that's right. Some people were listening. That's good. So next time I come, you'll be able to tell me about that. But this is Triceratops hyrtus. Now, such a big animal, if that's going to be preserved, it wouldn't just die and sort of be floating around on the surface of the water, and then gradually it would gradually sink. It wouldn't do that. Animals would eat it. You know, if kangaroos are knocked over on the side of the road, they you know, within 6 months or 12 months they disappear. And same with on the beach. When you go down, have you ever noticed you go running into the water and you go swimming? You probably don't do it. It gets pretty cold here, doesn't it? But it's nice up in the Gold Coast in Queensland where I come from. But you're running into the water and you notice all the fish lying on the bottom of the water. Do you see that on the bottom of the ocean? All waiting to be fossilized. You don't see it at all, do you? Because the environment cleans itself up and there's nothing left. So this animal, this Triceratops hyrtus, when it died, it would have to be buried by a lot of sediment quite quickly after it died. And so you're talking about meters of sediment to cover it. And you probably need another couple of meters to keep it buried as it rots so that it doesn't float. And so you're talking about a lot of sediment to wash in very quickly. And that's the catastrophe of Noah's flood, isn't it? And I mean, this is not the biggest animal that you see in the museum. At the Royal Tyrrell Museum, they had the remains of this animal. Look at the size of these legs. Can you see that? Big toes, you know, big leg at the bottom, the tibia and all that sort of thing. And look at this. It goes way, 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 way up. And so there were some incredibly large animals which were buried and evidence of Noah's flood. And I find that pretty exciting is that, you know, when people make an announcement about these fossils, when we're informed, when we're prepared, when we've got information that we've been able to share with our family, we're able to know what it means. Now, when I was at the Royal Tyrrell Museum and I hunted around on, you know, at my motel, we were looking at, I was looking at life science. I found this report about some fossils they found and are on display in the museum in life science. Can you see that? There's these, see these animals, these dinosaurs, there's a whole host of them up there. And this is what they said on this life science web page. It says, a herd of centrosaurs, a type of horned dinosaur, drowning in a flood millions of years ago in what is now Alberta, that's Canada, as depicted in this illustration. So this is an illustration, an artist's impression to depict it, this herd of dinosaurs that they found. And it says, they left behind what could be the world's largest dinosaur graveyard. So that's a lot of dinosaurs, isn't it? A herd of dinosaurs buried. We just saw the Triceratops. That was buried. And not just one dinosaur. Now we've got a herd of dinosaurs that are buried. And they got a picture of the rain. You see the rain coming down and there's water running across the ground. And it's burying all these dinosaurs. You know, that doesn't make sense, does it? But it actually, this is evidence for Noah's flood. So how do you interpret that? Well, you watch this. This is a herd of centrosaurs, a type of horned dinosaur, drowning in, and you change those words there, drowning in Noah's flood 4,500 years ago. So do you see how that works? It's really easy. There's these secular geologists who don't believe the Bible and they believe in evolution and they believe in millions of years. They've done all the research and they don't do lots of good research, but you can just take their research and just do a little tweaks on it and reinterpret it, and you've got the whole of the evidence for Noah's flood. I love doing that. And that it will empower you. If you've got teenagers, that will empower them as well. And so you could do the same when you're driving around the freeways here. You've got the amazing evidence that in the cutting, somebody's actually brought along the bulldozers and they've cut the cuttings and you drive along. You have to be very careful when you're driving not to look at them. As a passenger, you can. And this is the evidence of Noah's flood. I have don't have time this morning to talk about that, but it's a lot of that, and I can talk about it out there at the tables if you want to. But if you go to another place which is familiar, up the road, at just near Sydney, the Three Sisters, again, this is evidence for Noah's flood. You look at it, and nobody ever says that when you go there. They say 270 million years ago. That's what the signs say. And so whenever you see any age that's older than 4,500 years, you've got to realize, there's a problem with the date. There's always a problem with the date. The dates are the key things that throw everybody off the trail. And so here's 270 million years ago. And you look at it, and you can see the sandstone in the foreground. Can you see that? And the Three Sisters are there. That's what's left after its lot's been eroded away. And you look in the background, you can see the flat plateau. See how flat it is? Isn't that incredible? You see that? Incredibly flat. Nobody ever, people often don't even think about this, about, well, how did it get to be so flat? You ever wonder, how did it get to be so flat? Because when you have water flowing over the land, what's it do? It cuts gullies, doesn't it? It cuts gorges, it cuts gullies and valleys. It doesn't leave it flat like that. But of course, the Bible says that the whole world was deluged and destroyed. And you read it in Genesis, it says the waters rose, and they continued to rise, and they rose more, and the ark was lifted up, and says, till every high mountain under the entire heavens was covered. So the whole of the earth was covered in water. And so when the whole earth is covered in water, the water moves around, the water currents, and it makes these surfaces flat. And then as the waters came down, well, the ocean basin started to sink, and they don't just sort of sink nice and gradually like a lift. They go in jerks, you know, and a bit like earthquakes, and they sank down. And so you get these flat surfaces at different levels on the Earth's surface. And so when you see those, when you drive around the Australia, you see these everywhere. You see these flat surfaces. That's evidence of Noah's flood. And You've got a lot of flat areas around Melbourne. I saw us were flying in just the other day, yesterday, incredibly flat. And that's, again, it was covered in water, but that was as the waters of Noah's flood were retreating off the surface of the earth, and they left the surface very flat, and they washed all this debris in, all this vegetation in, and it got buried, heaps of vegetation. And that's the Yallourn coal, and which has been banned. It's sort of against the law to burn this stuff now. But anyway, they got all the coal came in, and it's used for electricity. So that was buried during Noah's flood. And also, what happened was, as the waters were retreating off the land, it came in. Oh, we'll have a look at this here first. So the waters are covering there, and then you've got this great big valley. How did that happen? Well, that was as the waters were retreating off the land. The land eventually came up above the water, and you got a lot of water carving this valley. Can you see that? Does that make sense? We can't see it now because it's gone, but you can see this great big wide valley. And geologists look at this, and there's people called geomorphologists, which mean they're people that look at the shape of the land, and they look at this and they think to themselves, wow, that river is too small for that valley. The river's too small. It couldn't have carved that valley because you'd only have a skinny gorge. And so they call it an underfit river. Well, I call it an overfit valley because it was carved by a lot of water as the waters of Noah's flood retreated. Do you see that? Does that make sense? And so once you understand this, once you sort of a few ideas have come down, you can see it everywhere, which is quite amazing. And here's another example of a valley here. I think I've skipped that over. This one here. This is Little Grand Canyon. It's a 40th the scale of Grand Canyon. And again, you can see the little river flowing through it. And you would think, well, most people would think that it's taken a long time for that river to carve that canyon. But it wasn't carved by that canyon, by that river. It was carved by a big mud flow. It didn't take thousands of years. It was just one day. And it was a result of this volcano exploding. Mount St. Helens, can you see the top's been blown off? See, that's all gone. An incredible explosion. 50 people were killed when it exploded quite a number of years ago. And then subsequent eruptions melted snow and ice, and that snow and ice came down as mud and carved these valleys, which we just saw. So there we've talked a little bit about rocks and fossils. I want to talk a little bit about the age of the earth now. And I think I've got enough time. What you hear when people talk about this, they say, "Oh, it's really easy. You know, it's amazing what these guys can." Oops-a-daisy. I must have the wrong slideshow. Right. I'll talk about the geology transformation tool. This is when you're looking around at rocks and that. A lot of people think, 500 million years. Oh man, I don't know what that is, and you got no idea what you're looking at. And so geologists have got this chart which they produce, and this chart it looks really complicated, but it's just got all the different labels that they. I'm sorry about this. I think I put the wrong slide in here. Okay, here we are. This is the part that I wanted about the age of the rocks. They say it's really easy. It's just like looking at a hourglass. Cooking eggs and that sort of thing. And so just like that, all the geologists do is they measure the amount of isotopes in the top, say potassium in this case, and they measure the amount in the bottom, argon in this case. They just make those measurements, and then they did the calculation, and hey presto, you've got the age of the rocks. But it doesn't work like that, because the question is, what was the starting amount? See, we know what's there now, just like that dinosaur bones. We can see the bones now, but we didn't see it get buried. We can see the starting amount at we measure it now, but we didn't see what it was at the beginning, and so we can't tell what the time is if we don't know what is at the beginning. And also, we don't know if any's been gained or lost there, or if any's been gained or lost there. Nothing's gained or lost in a glass, you know, one of these glass egg timers, but in a rock, that's a totally different thing. Now, there's a guy who went and checked out, and we don't know if the rates changed. There's a guy who did an experiment on a rock. This is a cool rock. You'd like this rock. And it's one of the ones that you should collect. But this is a volcanic rock. And he went and he took a little part of this rock and crushed it up. And he sent it off to the laboratory. And the laboratory does the tests. And they did all the standard calculations, and it came back with an age of 350,000 years. Simple as that. Just send it off and it comes back with the age. Excepting that, he took another little piece of the rock and he crushed it up and he picked out the little white minerals in it and he sent that off to the laboratory, and this amphibole, which he collected, came back with an age of 900,000 years. That's interesting. They did the standard calculation. But he also took a third sample. He crushed that up and he took the little black minerals out of it and he sent those off to the laboratory and it came back with an age of 2,800,000 years. And so the question is, how old is the rock? How old is the rock? And the answer is, what age would you like? You can choose any age you like. And in actual fact, this rock was only 10 years old. It was erupted from Mount St. Helens. People saw it actually erupted and it was 10 years old. Isn't that incredible? See, if it doesn't work with rocks where you know the age, why should you believe it for rocks where you don't know the age? And so, and geologists don't do that. See, there's an article on creation.com and there's also free brochures out there, which I've got a picture, I've got some of them here. It's called How Dating Methods Work. So that's the brochure. And they're free on the table there. You can take them away. And so this article talks about it, and I'll just put up some of the key points. The first point is there's no instrument that can measure the age. Can anybody tell me why there is no instrument that can measure the age? We sort of talked about it a little bit. Why is there no instrument that can measure the age? Can anybody suggest why that is? So that you know why and not just me telling you. Why is there no instrument that can measure the age of a rock? Beg your pardon? We don't know the starting point. We can measure in the present. We can do amazing measurements in the present, but we don't know what the starting conditions were. See, so there is no instrument that can measure the age. And you will see when they talk about age, you will see them put up the instruments and pictures of them and they'll say how amazing they are. And they are amazing instruments, but they don't really talk about the fact that they don't know what the starting conditions are. So if you don't know what the starting conditions are, then what are you going to have to do in order to make a calculation? What are you going to have to do? Make an assumption. You're going to have to guess what they are. And you can make some very sort of logical guesses, but that's the thing. All dating methods are based on assumptions. See, so when you see a date, you realise it's all based on assumptions. And the other thing is, if you're making an assumption, then basically you can get any age you like, depending on the assumptions that you make. And so the geologists are looking for a certain age. They think it would be somewhere between this and this. And so that's where they're looking for. And they're looking for ways which will give them an age which makes sense. And so that's the third thing is here. Geologists do not accept dates that don't fit within what they think it's going to be. So if the age comes up, the standard calculation doesn't work in that age, then they will say, oh, there must be some other factor here, and they will make assumptions to explain why the age is different. So that's the key thing. But you can know what happened in the past, in times when we were not there. Do you know how you can know what happened in the past and the age of something when we were not there? Hey? It's written in the Bible. I call it the historical method. Eyewitnesses. There was somebody there at the time who saw it happen. So an eyewitness was there. And then what happened was it was written down. And that's how I know my age. I have a birth certificate. My mother was there at the time, and there was a doctor. They wrote it in a birth certificate, and that's what the Bible is. You talked about that. You talked about the Bible. And so here's a birth certificate. And that's how we know about things in Australia, the first fleet in Australia, January 1788. How do we know about that? Did they do carbon dating on the ship? No. There were people who were there. They wrote it down in logs. They wrote it in letters. And it's now part of the history. So that's how we know. And that's how we know the age of the earth. I got this little diagram of the what's written in the Bible. And we know it from the genealogies. And the genealogies, you sort of read them and you think, oh, how boring is that? And you skip over them. But the genealogies have got amazing information in them. And this starts up here. This is Adam. It's a little artist's impression of Adam. And it goes from Adam to Seth to Enosh. And it goes, and at the top row, about in the middle, it's got Noah. Then you follow all around there and it goes down to Abraham. And it's, there is all historical figures. So these are people that were alive at the time. They recorded things and they're in the Bible and they're recorded for us. And it goes down that to David is in the middle there and eventually comes across to Christ over there. And so that's how we know the age of the earth. And so the Bible's age, we don't have sin and death before Adam and Eve. We know the world is young. We know that God created a good world and we have a good God who's kind and loving. And we know why Jesus came. The reason why he came was to redeem the world. And so isn't that really cool? And so it all fits together. And that's why it comes to here. We've got homework to do. Always be prepared. You have to get prepared to give an answer to everybody who asks you to give the reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect. So being prepared. And I've already talked about how you can be prepared, but be prepared. And what you need, well, one of the things which is really good, you need something that's going to be fun. That's the first thing. You need something that's going to be well informed, that you can rely on. You need something that's not going to be hard to read or not going to be hard to access. So that's what you want. You don't want to have to read a great big book usually. You don't want to have to do a long course usually. You want, and also you want something that's sort of going to be ongoing a little bit so you get refreshed. And that's what Creation Magazine is. And I got a couple of copies here. I carry them around. And it's Creation Magazine. And it's a family magazine. And the good thing about it, easy to read because it's colour and short articles. And it deals with all the sorts of issues that come up that you think about. And it's interesting because it deals with interesting people and interesting topics. So that's Creation Magazine. And often we'll pass a clipboard around in a service like this, but we have clipboards out on the table there, so you can actually subscribe. So signing up here on this clipboard, and you can subscribe to the magazine, and you can pay for it and start to get it in your home. I was at a church recently, and there was a lady. She said to her husband, "Do we get that magazine?" And he said, "Yeah, sure, I get an electronic version of it." He said, she said, "What good is that?" She said, "We need one in our home. We need one on the table where the kids are going to pick it up." And that's really what's necessary, something that the kids pick up. There's a guy I saw him on Facebook, a young guy, and he said, "I've been reading creation stuff for years." He said, "A lot of fun." And that's what kids do. Once they start reading this stuff, a lot of kids get very interested in it and it becomes a lot of fun. And it's amazing how they become competent at school, you know, depending on, or university. And they're not fazed by the stuff that they get taught at university. And so that's why Creation Magazine and Creation stuff is so useful and so helpful. And so I talk about that's going to creation.com. And the newsletter. Don't forget the newsletter. Don't miss out. You're going to have to sort of make special effort to sort of say, yep, I want to get that. I need that. And the other thing is, it'd be nice if you could get all this in one just book. All in one, just one book. And so here is the just one book. It sort of deals with all the questions that come up. And it's the answers book. And it's not a very expensive book, but a lot of people find this is helpful. They read it through. A lot of teachers get it and they use it when they're teaching in their class. A lot of Sabbath school, when they're teaching younger children, they find this is very helpful. It's a great resource, which is the Answers book. And another one is Evolution's Achilles Heels. It's a little bit more technical, but it's a similar sort of thing that covers a lot of things. And there's Exploring Geology with Mr. Hibb. I think you'd like that, young man. Mr. Hibb's a grasshopper. And Biblical Geology 101. So I put a lot of books in which are long. So what this will do for you, it'll warn you of the risks to your family. It's also going to, it shows you that creation is factual. And it gives confidence in the Word of God. And finally, it reveals ways in which you can be prepared. So I pray that's been a blessing to you. And we're going to finish with a song, aren't we? Is that right? I'm not quite sure exactly the time. I have got a watch, but I think it's all right. There you go.